providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. And as promised, we're shifting our focus to the energy sectors. We're chatting with Joseph Schachter, founder and editor of the Schachter Energy Report. Also, a free report called Eye on Energy, where Joseph covers more of the fundamental drivers in terms of published data for oil and natural gas. We're going to start off by talking, again, more on these fundamentals, what Joseph thinks is driving the oil move up to the mid-80s, and natural gas at least a little rebound into about the $1.80 range. But still a lot of catching up potentially for natural gas compared to what oil has done. But again, very different markets. Joseph, let's start off with that move in oil as we are recording this on Thursday later in the day. Crude is up to, well, right about $85, off a little bit today, but it's been quite a strong run for crude in terms of the data that you are reading, what you think is driving this market. Please share with us, what are these fundamental drivers behind this move higher?
Well, there were a number of drivers that pushed it up. Originally, it was the OPEC, you know, putting in limits on their production, where they did do some cutbacks, but never as large as what they were talking about being the 2.2 million barrels. It was more like 400,000 or 500,000, but it was a cut. The second, of course, was winter, where you had strong demand, but that's, you know, ending, even though there's still snow in Calgary. And third was the situation going on in the Middle East with the attack in October, and then Israel's war against Hamas in Gaza. And it pushed the price of oil up to about $88. Today, we're down $1.20 to about $85. And the reason is yesterday's EIA report showed a very big build in inventories, 13 million barrels. And we now have some of the subsets of it showing that they're above last year's inventory levels. And I'll give you a couple examples. For example, you have the commercial stocks were up 5.8 million. Motor gasoline was up 700,000, but it's up 6.3 million from a year ago. And then distillate fuels is up 1.7 million, and that's up 5.3 million barrels from a year ago. If we go to total stocks, you're looking at 13 million barrels, and we're only 12.5 million below a year ago. So again, a couple more weeks of this, and we're in the shoulder season, where after the strong winter demand, you go into a period where global demand falls off by 2 to 2.5 million. So if we have an average of, let's say, 102 for the year, you might go below 100, 98, 99, maybe at the low during those shoulder seasons of spring and fall. And then when you get into the summer, you might be 103, 104. And then at the end of this year, you'll probably be again at the same when we have winter 2024, 2025. The other key point of interest in the report was that exports came down. The U.S. has been a very big exporter of light crude. And, you know, countries around the world would, of course, love to buy from the U.S. if they have, especially if they have deficits in trade or surpluses in trade, sorry, and they need to tighten that up with the U.S. So they would buy U.S. crude versus other crudes and with the, you know, transportation advantages as well. But exports fell 1.3 million barrels from 4 million to 2.7. which tells you that there's an adequate supply of oil around the world right now. And with shoulder season underway, if the U.S. Consumption is down, which it was, it fell 2 million barrels from 21.3 to 19.2. And if China demand is weak, then you're seeing that we're seeing a softness in demand in the two largest economies in the world. And the biggest, you know, China's the biggest importer and the United States is the biggest producer and consumer. That tells you that prices could back off, except for what's going on in terms of the geopolitical situation and the concern right now that after Israel killed two Iranian generals in a consulate in Damascus, historically, when you're at war, you never attack diplomatic missions, be they embassies or consulates. Israel did that to get after this general that was controlling all of the terrorist organizations in Syria and Lebanon and working with Hamas in Gaza. And there was another killing just, you know, yesterday of, you know, three more militants tied to the one of the leaders in living in Qatar, I think. So there's a political and war situation has kept prices up, even though, as I said, we're down today over a dollar. But I think that the, you know, the price of $85, based on the fundamentals, should go below 80, and there'll still be a war premium in there, maybe 10, 12 bucks. But if for some reason the war situation stabilizes and Biden is able to arm twist Netanyahu to not invade Rafah, and there's some kind of a hostage deal that cools things down with a ceasefire, we could see a lot of that war premium come down. And so there is a window between now and the summer driving season at the end of June for the price of crude to not only break 80, but potentially even break 70.
Well, and Joseph, with that in mind, if oil could hit this softer patch between now and the summer driving season, and like you say, break 80 and possibly even break 70, what does that mean for the oily stocks? Because they've been on a blistering run higher. I usually look at things through the lens of XLE, the big ETF, and it's been making all-time highs and honestly was continuing to blaze higher even when oil was trending sideways. It's just now has maybe started to roll over, and we've seen that in the small caps and XOP. Do you think if we saw that pullback in price that this is a good profit-taking moment for energy investors?
I think because of the large caps being the XLE, it reached 98.47 on the high. It's down, you know, to 97.43 today. But, you know, it could go down, you know, below 80 if we do see the price of crude break 70. So to take profits makes a lot of sense to me. Some of our favorite names have had such great runs. You know, we had Whitecap in the low eights, and now it was over 10.5 earlier today. So that was a very nice move. And then you had a surge, which was under $6, and it got over $8. That was one of our top picks, and it did very well. So there's been some great moves in the oily sector, and if we bust 80, they're going to go down. And, you know, and then depending upon what happens in the Middle East, we could go much lower. But again, the window is till the summer driving season. I think once we are in the summer driving season, I think we will see 80s and maybe even 90s. And in our forecast, we're even assuming in Q4 that supply and demand tighten up quite a bit, and we see prices even peaking over 100, not for the whole quarter, but you may see a few days in that, you know, 3-month window that are where we see price trading over 100 simply because the supply demand situation tightens up, because most companies are just focusing on replacing their decline rates. And maybe if you're a growth mode, you might be 3-5%. So there's not going to be a lot of new production coming on in, you know, in 2024, 25. And if OPEC is, you know, keeps their quotas, as they say, and don't bring back a lot of production. And Russia, of course, has problems now with all the attacks on its refineries and production facilities shipping through the Black Sea. We could see that $100. And if, you know, there's a war event somewhere, you know, China, Taiwan, you know, Russia has more success in their fight in Ukraine, in eastern part of the country. If Lebanon, Hezbollah get involved with direct attacks on Israel, all of that war premium can expand. We've had in the past war premiums $30 or $40 when Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait. So, you know, right now I would say there's a $10 to $15 war premium there, but that war premium can shrink or that war premium can expand depending upon how bad the hostilities are.
What are your thoughts on some of the smaller energy stocks? Because those have started to do a bit better, but again, they're not close to even breaking out to all-time highs. I don't even think many of them, actually some of them are at right around 52-week highs, so that's a bit more encouraging, but still a lot more upside to go. They've also traded generally lower volumes from what I've seen. Any interest in some of the smaller cap stocks to add a little more torque to the upside when you do get that other buying signal?
Yeah, we like, you know, names like Bonterra that has a high oil content, Hemisphere, InPlay Oil, you know, Questaire Energy, Rubellite, you know, Touchstone, Valura, and there's others that have a higher oil weighting, you know, Surge Energy is 86% liquids. So you can have those stocks do better, you know, because, the generalists, when they come in, they go to the CNQs, they go to the Suncors, Imperial Oil, Synovus, Meg, and then they work their way down. And we just had the BMO CAP conference on Tuesday and Wednesday in Toronto, and a lot of generalist portfolio managers were there, and there were a lot of one-on-one meetings that the companies told me they had with people they hadn't seen for a while, because the generalists weren't interested in the sector. And that's why the oily names have done well. A couple of the service stocks like CES Energy Solutions had a good week because of the conference. It reached a high this week of 571, which is the 52-week high. This was a $2.30 stock at the low. So we are seeing some action in the service sector. One of my favorite names is Trican. It got up to 451. This was a stock that was under $3 at the low this year. So, and you know, it's not near its high, which was 533, but it's 451, and it's up today when a lot of the companies are down. Because if we start seeing a lot more activity once TMX line is on, which is imminent, and then the Coastal Gas line comes on in Q4 with LNG Canada, the activity level to drill to fill is going to pick up the service sector activity level, and that's going to cause profitability, you know, as your utilization of your equipment goes up and your day rates even have some chance to move up, the total return becomes very good for energy service companies.
I'm glad you brought up the energy services companies, because I was looking at OIH as another ETF and noticed that it had had a pretty good move recently. It was rolling over, but to your point, if the LNG Canada terminals come on, that could be a new life for that sector. Let's talk a little bit more about NatGas, though, and the NatGas stocks. I know that right now we have a lot of interest, people writing us in questions, asking about, has NatGas finally bottomed? When will it get moving? What about the stocks? What's your take on that, Joseph?
Well, you know, NatGas historically backs off this time of year. You know, winter demand is over to the most part. You know, you had a 37 BCF drawdown last Thursday. I haven't pulled out the data from today yet. You know, withdrawal season is the end of April, ends in April, and then we start building. But we have very high storage levels for NatGas and also in Canada and the States. In the U.S., I just got the data from last week. It's 2.26 TCF, and you want to normally be under 2 TCF at the end of the year. A year ago, we were at 1.84 TCF, and the five-year average is 1.5 TCF. So we're looking at very big storage numbers. And until we get more LNG exports out of the States, you know, we are seeing a decline in production in a number of places in the U.S. and the Appalachia area. The problem we have is everybody's drilling for light oil in the Permian, and as a byproduct, you have natural gas. So the companies there are selling natural gas at or giving it away at it, or even paying somebody to take it. So negative pricing, because they're making so much money on the light oil, you know, at $85 a barrel. In Canada, natural gas is still, you know, sloppy at the $1.60-$1.70 range, because the same thing, if you're an oil producer and you're getting $85 US, multiply that by 1.36 or whatever the Canadian exchange rate is today, and you're making out really, really well, that if the byproduct natural gas doesn't make you any money, you don't really care. And so it hurts the dry natural gas guys who don't have that liquids support.
Joseph, how do you go about analyzing these companies then that do have that natural gas kicker? But as you just mentioned, it can vary between what that offtake or what that extra product is. How much does that filter into your analysis of these companies?
Well, I always look at the mix of the business. We do up an NAV with the same pricing comparison, you know, right across the board between large cap, small cap, and we have a discount for heavy oil versus light oil. And then we come up with NAVs. And right now, you know, the NAVs of many of these companies, they're trading at significant discounts. For example, I know you guys know Petrus quite well. The company has a $4.02 NAV at the end of 2023. The stock trades at $1.32. One of the oily names, Bonterra, which is a junior, trading at $6.77 when I did this run. I think it's a bit higher today. but it has an NAV of 21.28. So you look at all those numbers and the mix, and then you look at the, you know, the way the market is trading. I prefer to buy stocks when the market is ignoring the area and they're very, very cheap. And, you know, we've had many, many times like that December of last year. We've had a couple times this year already. And I think that right now we've had a frenzy. And if the price of oil backs off below 80, we're going to see, you know, a pullback right across the board, with the most air being those large cap oily names that the big generalist institutions chased up here. And they pushed them up to what I consider lofty levels if we have a break of $80 WTI.
Well, Joseph, just summarizing kind of the themes in the market here, if the oily names, especially the biggest ones, the largest cap stocks, could have a little more downside pressure, and if some of the small caps or some of the oil services, and in particular the nat gas stocks, have a little more upside, does it make sense to just do a rotation trade and pull some money out of the biggest oil names and put it into nat gas stocks or oil services stocks?
Yeah, because you've got some very nice dividends there as well. You know, if you look at, you know, a company like Inplay, which is, you know, 59% liquids, you know, they're paying a 7% dividend yield. Petrus is paying a 9% dividend yield, a penny a month. You know, so you've got some very, very healthy. Surge pays, you know, 4 cents a month, 6% dividend yield. So you've got companies that are giving you reasonable yields that have a nice mix of both oil and natural gas. And that's, I think, a good rotation. But if you're a little more nimble, you might want to wait for the correction, because you might save 10% or more on the natural gas weighted or energy service names, you know, if we have a 15-20% overall correction in the energy sector over the next couple of months.
So, Joseph, how sustainable are these dividends, though? If, let's just say, natural gas stays sub $2, kind of in the range that it's in now, and if oil does correct like you think it might?
Yeah, I think the, you know, the natural gas, you know, may back off a little bit more because of this, you know, during the summertime, unless the air conditioning demand is strong. But remember, September and LNG Canada is not that far away. So, you know, we may have some ruckus and, you know, and weaker prices in the short term. But anytime you see bargains in the sector, you want to nibble away at them. You know, we had tremendous bargains in the oily side going back when we had oil sub $70, which was not that long ago. What was that, November, December? And we got, there were a lot of bargains, and a lot of those stocks are up 30 to 50% from those lows. If they back off, you know, 20% from here, you know, there'll be buys. And if we do see $90 with peaking over 100 in Q4 for oil, if we get 250 plus for gas, remember, a lot of the natural gas companies have been doing hedging. And if you look at the forward curve for winter of 24-25, you've got pricing in there over $3. So, you know, companies that are doing appropriate hedging, 25 to 40% of their business, so that they have their CapEx program taken care of. If you're at the higher end, also because you have a dividend, you want to protect that. And then you leave some for better pricing if there is a that. Companies that don't hedge are the ones that are going to be more vulnerable to low prices. But some of them are trading at such discounts to their NAV. For example, one of the names that we've liked and talked about many times in the past is Birch Cliff, which trades around $5.50. Its NAV is $24.22. So, you know, if it, in the next 2 to 3 years, if it just gets to its NAV, we're looking at a, you know, a four bagger plus.
Well, Joseph, another big theme from 2023 was M&A in the oil and gas sector. We saw a lot of big deals and we saw a couple mid-cap deals. We haven't seen as much in 2024. Do you think with the big boost that a lot of the mega cap stocks have right now, where they could use their equity as their currency, that we'll start seeing a pickup in M&A deals?
The problem you have is the expectations between the buyer and the seller. And talking to companies, as I am right now, because we're having you know, updates on the companies, and also talking to them about coming to the Catch the Energy conference in October, they're saying that there's packages out there, but the expectations of the sellers is much too high, because they're looking out at you know, $85 oil, maybe going to 100, and they're looking at Coastal coming on and $253 gas, so they want to be paid for part of it. They know they're not going to get all of it, because people use long-term pricing, not just peak pricing in their evaluations of asset purchases, but there's a big gap there. But if we do get into 2025 and we have these higher prices and it looks like they're going to go higher and they're sustainable, then it's very likely that we'll see more deal flow at the end of the year. And especially the big companies that are, let's say, part of LNG Canada and other LNG projects, many of them do not have enough gas to support the projects. They have to go out and buy gas from the market, or they buy companies and grab their reserves. So there's companies out there like in BC Crew, you know, you've got so many companies, you know, that have large gas reserves. We saw last year Pipestone get taken over by Strathcona. My guess is we're going to see more deal flow. Right now, from what I'm hearing from the industry, the 2.1 BCF that LNG Canada has for train number one is about 800 million a day short of gas controlled or owned by the owners of LNG Canada, which means they're doing deals. You know, you may have seen the deal that Pembina just did with Cedars for 200 million a day. So, you know, companies are trying to lock in supply. Tourmaline's done a deal with Rockies LNG. So the companies are being, you know, locking in at favorable pricing into these LNG companies. But the LNG companies, especially the big multinationals, at some point may decide they would like to buy the reserves, and we may see more takeovers at that point.
All right, Joseph, thank you very much for your insights here. Very interesting, you know, how much we appreciate looking at the energy sector and just how well a lot of these companies, these stocks, especially the big ones, have done. And this rally in oil, mid-80s, it's a strong price for these companies that continue to generate very nice cash. I hope all of you enjoyed this weekend show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Again, a bit more of a focus on the resource sectors. That is a broad sector that has continued to run in the last couple months, especially in the stocks starting to play catch up, especially on the precious metals front, to those underlying prices. Everyone, please go back through our website and podcast and YouTube page under The KE Report to listen to all our daily editorials and company updates. Keep in touch with us. We'll be back with you on Monday and be back on the weekend show next Saturday. Hope you all have a great rest of your weekend. Joseph, thanks again for joining us.
My pleasure.